Rewind is an award-winning insider's look at Wisconsin politics and public policy. Brought to you by Wisconsin Eye and wispolitics.com. To become a program sponsor, please send an email to rewind@wiseye.org.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even going to use it.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, a look at the post-convention week and a busy week in the Capitol with Joint Finance. But first, Wisai was there. Two snippets from the convention. Senator Ron Johnson defends a president trade and tariffs, and Congressman Sean Duffy. Those that want to remove President Trump in Washington, don't use the deep state. And the sponsor of the bill to legalize recreational marijuana says states that have done so have lower suicide rates and lower rates of opioid addiction. And two candidates running for chair of the state Democratic Party talk about 2020. Wish I was there.
All that being said, after I get done talking to somebody who's really been harmed, either manufacturer or farmer by trade, almost invariably the last thing they say to me is, yeah, but Senator, I really support what President Trump's trying to do, because they've been abused by the fact that China's been cheating, been stealing our stuff. Other presidents have tried to make trade fairer and freer, more reciprocal, and President Trump is trying to do everything he can to say, no, I'm serious about this, I'm not bluffing, he's not bluffing, and so we are incurring that short-term pain, but keep your fingers crossed. Particularly agriculture is what they're saying on the China deal. Farmers are going to love the China trade agreement.
What's the constitutional crisis but for the fact that the Democrats don't want to accept the results of the last election? If you don't like the results, look to 2020. Try to beat Donald Trump there. But don't try to use the deep state of government or the FBI or the DOJ and try to undo the will of the people.
Today, 1 in 10 kids is going to be without a parent in the home for at least some time. And for every child who's raised by a relative within the foster care system, there are 20 being raised by relatives outside of it. So this is a pretty big problem.
Medical marijuana states that have legalized cannabis actually have reduced rates of suicide in those communities. Additionally, in states that have legalized cannabis, we see a 23% decrease in opioid dependency and a 25% decrease in opioid deaths. Cannabis does not kill people.
Are you going to try to get delegates and visitors, even reporters, to come early to Wisconsin or to stay later?
Yes, all of the above.
So how are you going to reach them and how are you going
to
pitch them?
Get to the media before they make up the story and the version of Wisconsin that they think is the case. So a lot of that is about educating and building relationships with them before they assign their producers and stories.
What's at stake in the elections in 2020 and 2022?
For the past almost decade, Republicans bought control in this state, and that we have a chance to be able to reverse that. Thank God we have elected Tony Evers. Thank God we've elected all five statewide constitutional offices with Democrats. To be able to challenge the maps that will be made for the next decade.
Frankly, the whole world is going to look at what happens in Wisconsin in the fall of 2020. And the fact that we have the National Convention, it's both this challenge to make a great convention. It's also an opportunity, because we're going to need potentially 15,000 volunteers at the convention. This is an operation at a scale where we can get a kind of whole new generation and every previous generation of folks involved in the party, help to give them a great experience, get them trained and unified, and then come out of that like a rocket.
Governor Evers, three centerpieces of his campaign, transportation funding, health care, and K-12. So let's talk about K-12 first. Yesterday, the Joint Finance Committee, the Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee, approved a K-12 budget upper of $500 million over the 2 years, whereas the governor wanted $1.48 billion. They have a $900 million difference. Now, Senator Erpenbach said, who we'll hear from in a little bit, he said he hopes this is just a Republican bargaining position. What do you think?
We asked that question, and Luther Olson, who is on the Finance Committee but also the Education Chair, said he urged Evers to sign it because it's the best he's going to get.
Yeah.
Now, we'll see if that's true, but the question then begs, what is the Evers hammer to convince him to do something else? So are they going to veto the entire budget?
Well, some of the parents at that press conference before Joint Finance vote said yes. this is such a big deal, he should veto the entire budget.
Then what does he get? How does he get a better position out of that? I mean, I'm not saying he can't, but it's how do you maneuver that position where if you veto the budget, what's your end game? You have to have a plan that's two or three steps ahead of where you're at right now, of how you get to where you want to be. There is a segment of the Senate Republican caucus who I will promise you would just as soon do no budget at all than do what Evers wants to do, because in their minds, not spending more money is a good thing. They believe that's more fiscally responsible than the Evers plan. So there are certain people who wouldn't feel any pressure from back home about no budget, but that pressure comes September, October, and especially November, when the school districts don't get their increases in aid payments, when the local governments don't get their, they don't know what they're getting so they can set their levies for the next year. That's when the pressure comes. Who's going to feel that pressure? Think about this. How many swing districts we have left in Wisconsin anymore in either house? Right?
Count them on what, two hands? It takes two hands?
Go ahead. The people in the 52-53% Republican districts, they won fairly easily last year, even in a bad environment, because they're in areas where Republicans are doing better, right? Rural areas. So how do you convince those folks to all of a sudden rise up and say, we have to have a budget? That used to be what we'd see. Like, remember back in 2007, we had a Democrat in the East Wing, and Jim Doyle. We had Democrats controlling the state Senate and Republican state assembly.
Yes.
They couldn't get a deal done until the very end of October. When they did it, in the assembly, they passed it with a combination of Democratic and Republican votes, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Can you imagine that scenario right now where there's a coalition in the middle that gets a budget over Robin Voss's request?
No, well.
That's what I'm trying to get at. Like, where does that pressure come to get something done?
I understand, but let's break down a little bit the GOP package. They went with the same thing that's in the current biennium, $200 per pupil upper year first year, and then a $204 upper second year. This disregards what the Democrats say is a disparity between high and low spending districts. So they're just going to $200 and $204 per pupil. But this special ed, what a gap that is. They approved $97 million. The governor said we need $600 million more over the biennium because special ed has not been increased in 10 years. And finally, the GOP package, which finance approved, $23 million more for mental health programs, $41 million less than Evers wants. The governor's February budget was aimed at closing the gap, the achievement gap, and doing a lot more with our poorer districts, and that just got discarded by joint finance.
Yeah. If you look at the first, the per pupil increase, and so what we call this is the levy limit, like spending limit, okay? That is what you can spend per kid between property taxes and state dollars. Most of that money would go through what we call the school aid formula, which is based about property values. So poorer districts, property-wise, get more money than richer districts. $25 of that increase in both of it for categorically, which basically is everybody gets the same amount of money.
Yep.
So they broke it up that way. The special ed money, which is the biggest real difference, that is you're going to get under the Republican budget, if it's passed as is, you get to 30%, you'd cover 30% of the cost of special education in the second year of the budget. Republicans argue that's what Evers had pushed for in previous years, so they're meeting his old number.
Yes.
But Evers' budget, you would go to 30%, I think, in the first year, and then 60% in the second year. And this is why it's important. Under federal law, you have what's called maintenance of effort. So if you start funding 60% of special ed costs, that's your benchmark forever going forward. You can't back away from that because they don't want you to be able to draw federal dollars down and then replace state dollars with federal money. So you have to maintain that. Republicans argue by going to such a high level for reimbursement that you are locking them in, if there is a downturn, that it would starve other areas of education to keep that special ed commitment. Now, right now we're flush with general purpose revenue, which pays for those things.
Yes.
At some point, the recession is coming. As of next month, June, we'll have 10 years uninterrupted growth, which I don't know if it's ever happened before with our economy. At some point, it's going to contract. When?
Yeah.
I went back and looked, Steve. There are, I think, fewer than 20 Republicans in the Capitol who were here in 2011, the last time we had a budget that had any pain in it, right? Now, yes, they had to tweak things in 13, 15, and 17. They had to pare back here. But a true pain budget, 11. A real big pain budget was 9, right? These guys don't know what it's like to deal with a true cut when it comes to spending. Most of them don't.
After the big recession, you actually had, for the first time in state history, general purpose tax collections drop It was just amazing. The governor, in the wake of the joint finance, said, as you know, education is in my DNA. Started out as a science teacher and then superintendent of public instruction. But now let's hear. Co-chairman John Nygren said, look, the $12 billion, we are proposing $12 billion over the two-year budget for K-12. But the answer from Democratic Senator John Erpenbach, please.
This budget will have over $12 billion in state support for public schools. It will have a 200 per pupil in the first year and 204 per pupil in the second year. That's a 604 pupil per biennium, over the biennium increase in per pupil funding. Over $20 million increase in funding for student mental health. We will fully fund high cost transportation aid, and we will target resources to rural districts.
Republicans have the audacity to talk about how great the economy is in Wisconsin thanks to their tax policies, and then turn around and cut what Governor Evers has proposed in special education funding by 84%. Tony Evers campaigned, first and foremost, throughout the entire campaign on making sure our public schools were made whole. That's where he started building his budget. That's how he built his budget. And he won the election. Scott Walker didn't. Scott Walker campaigned on Foxconn. Tony Evers campaigned on our public schools. Tony won.
We both went to the GOP convention in Oshkosh last weekend. I was off interviewing people with titles. You found a nugget of news here. You interviewed, you talked to Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald and Speaker Voss. They're considering splitting the budget bill into two, the budget into two bills. Mm-hmm. I think that's a potentially a big deal. Talk about that.
Okay, so in this whole budget debate, one thing we've talked about is what could Evers do with his veto pen? Remember, he has the most powerful veto pen in the country. With that pen, he can strike out, he can write down numbers, he can strike out sentences. What he cannot do anymore, which he used to be able to, strike out an individual letter or stitch together different parts of other sentences.
The Vanna White. Yes.
Still, however,
that's gone. He's lost that ability.
However, it's still the most powerful veto pen in the country if the bill has an appropriation in it. And why that's important. In this budget debate we've talked about, what could Evers do to rework the bill? Could he make it more to his liking with a partial veto authority and then sign it? Would he have to veto the entire thing because he didn't like, he couldn't get far enough with his partial veto authority? Well, this approach we're talking about, we're splitting the bill into two pieces. One would be all appropriations. Everything you spend would be one bill.
Yeah.
One would be all the policy. By doing that, you would, in theory, shield the policy bill from the partial veto because there's no appropriation. You can't use a partial veto on that bill. We don't know, though, is what's the potential downside of this. Robin Voss, when I talked to him, the Speaker of the Assembly, said he's just exploring it right now. It's an idea worth looking at. He's trying to see what could possibly happen. Now, he mentioned, you know, like Act 10, for example, the Governor Walker's proposal about collective bargaining powers for state employees. Remember, he split that in two. Because you need a quorum in the state Senate to pass an appropriation bill. They split the policy off the appropriation, passed the policy, because Democrats went to Illinois, then they came back and they could do the appropriations. So it's been done before other bills. But as a budget bill, going back to 1931, we first started calling executive budget, which basically means everything's in one bill. Before that, we did a bill for every agency. Can you imagine now doing a bill for every agency?
Right.
So,
bills.
Since 1931, it's all been one bill. Now, there have been examples of, like, Governor Tommy Thompson proposing several bills, like one main budget bill, but breaking off a couple of pieces into separate bills. But I went back and looked. Since 31, every budget has been signed into act, a law, is one single act. So this would be a first, as far as I can tell. But again, what's the downside, and then what does Evers do? John Erpenbach, a Democrat who's on the Finance Committee, said that they are, basis point, begging Evers to veto the budget. They do something like this.
Well, okay, but let's walk through an example. I interviewed, as we saw and I was there, the new Secretary of Tourism, Sarah Meany. Right now, we spend about $12 million promoting Wisconsin. Governor Evers asked for an additional $5 million. So if you just have the policy, let's continue to recognize and fund the State Department of Tourism, and then if you have the separate spending bill and the Republicans keep 12 in place, the governor can write it down, but he can't write it up, can
nope.
he? He
no.
cannot write it up. He cannot take a $12 million spent on tourism promotion to 17, but he can write it down. Can he write down the choice, a program that he doesn't like,
choice,
appropriation?
Remember, they changed state law before, so any increase that K-12 public schools get, choice gets. So they put that in state law so it can protect it from that. Now, I don't know what creative things he could do with the partial veto authority with that spending bill. I mean, that's what they're trying to figure out. What's right. the downside?
Right.
But what Robin told me was that they have time. Finance can do things as is and get through just fine. They don't need to make a decision about doing one or two bills until the very end. You split them apart and go from there.
Well, that's very intriguing. Okay, which sets up the next subject. I kind of wanted to take a look at where joint finance is right now. So let's talk about what they've approved. K-12 school funding, the corrections budget, the spending for our tech colleges. Now let's talk about the big decisions that they're going to have to make, I think, in the next 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about, they've got to sign off on, finally, on the budgets for health services, children and families departments, natural resources, ag departments. Middle class tax cut. When I got Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald and Speaker Voss one-on-one at the conventions, Speaker Voss said, we'd like for that to be there. Do you think that they're going to load that middle-income tax cut, remember,
mm-hmm.
which your governor vetoes?
Maybe.
That's going to be part of it?
Maybe. I don't know for sure yet. Because, look, the big spenders of general purpose revenue, of those, we have corrections is done. We have K-12 done. We have UW system on Tuesday,
yep.
which leaves, we have to do Medicaid, which is the big, you know, one of the big, next education is the biggest driver.
Right.
We also have to do taxes. That's another big thing that's out there. So if you look at this budget process, K-12 is a key decision. They pick their number, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They've got corrections done. My guess is with the UW system, it'll get an increase, but not as much as what Evers proposed. With Medicaid, the going theory is that, remember, they rejected the expansion of Medicaid under Obamacare to take that federal money.
And the cost to continue MA is more than $320 million over 2 years.
So what they'll do is they'll try to find a way to put a little bit more state money into the program, because every dollar you put in from the state, you pull down federal matching dollars, right?
Yep.
You put more money into Medicaid, you then are able to use that extra money to raise reimbursement rates for the health groups that wanted to see the expansion. So you can do that, okay? The problem that I see for them right now, or the challenge I see for them, is transportation.
Yep.
Because if you keep asking
we
people about
agree. It, agree.
There isn't a clear answer what it is. Now, with the revenue we talked about last week, that extra $753 million, it is one-time money for the most part, remember, because people are taking advantage of the federal tax law change from 17, moving things around, they pay this or pay that. That money isn't guaranteed to be there going forward. So what do they do with it? Could you use it for building projects or road, could it be a transportation piece?
Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, in my one-on-one interview, floated that idea. We have possibly the ability to fix some bridges with that one-time money. When I asked Speaker Voss about that, he wasn't a fan, let's just
no,
say
no, because do you build that in? How is that built into the budget then? Because, you know, you got to watch how you do it, because you could call it building the base, that if you build the base, then you have commitment going forward. So that's stuff to watch. But the other thing is we have a recession coming at some point, right? Those tax collection numbers, which really look good on income and corporate.
Boy, do they ever.
There's a little bit of
5% uppers.
A little bit of a warning there that sales tax collections are going to be now $280 million less than we thought before. And, you know, that might be a blip, right? But it's just something to watch. And when that recession comes, how do we deal with it? Which is why they're talking about taking a lot of money and putting it aside into the rainy day fund.
Yes.
I think if they don't do anything right now, we get up to like north of $630 million in rainy day fund as of June 30th, okay? Which is, sounds like a lot of money, but it's not in an $80 billion budget. So do they save more knowing the recession's coming, they might get a hit, or again, is it a tempting pot to use on transportation?
Well, in the middle of June, they're going to have to balance this stuff. In other words, they're at $500 million more for K-12. However, they put $639 million more for K-12 in this current budget. So if they went to $640 or $650, they could say, we're putting even more in, and that might reduce the amount of money for the tax cut. So there's a lot of juggling left ahead. But they have made, when you say no to Medicaid expansion, when you act on corrections, and when you lock in numbers for K-12, they've made some serious progress that I predict they're on their way to the joint finance on the way to a budget by mid-June.
The goal is to have it out of there by June 13th or 14th,
yep.
that Thursday or Friday before Father's Day.
Yeah.
That would allow the Legislative Fiscal Bureau then to draft the bill the following week to 10 days, and then get on the floor the last week of June and pass it before June 30th right. on Evers' desk.
Okay. New subject. We've been talking about the abortion bills that the Assembly passed, that the Republicans passed and sent them to the Senate. This week, I just want to read the governor's tweet. We shouldn't be limiting the right for women to make their own health care decisions. That's why I'll veto the bills passed by the Assembly last week if they arrive on my desk. It's time to listen to women. Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinke greeted it. The governor is for abortion anytime, any reason. Here's my question, JR. When you have somebody like Republican Senator Pat Testin, he's running for a second term next year. Do you put him at risk, making him vote for abortion bills that the governor's just said have no chance of becoming law?
Republicans feel like these are bills that even with people who joint support abortion rights are okay with. So remember, we've got the Born Alive bill. If you survive an abortion attempt, you have to be required medical care.
No abortions for gender, considerations.
They think things like that are ones you can make a pitch that, you know. Plus, look at Testin's district, right? That's Trump territory now. I know it's been in Democrat hands for years, but if you go back and look at like last fall, you know, Walker did decently there. So it's a question of where are the swing districts anymore and where will they feel pressure from this? Yeah. You know, at one point there was chatter about not going controversial bills because it wouldn't be worth the effort. But they're seeing this also as something that excites their base, right? Gets them fired up. And one of the problems that we saw this postmortem from the state GOP was the base of the party didn't feel energized last fall. They felt like they were neglected. And so they're looking at ways, how do we energize our base and get them out turn out for 2020?
Just a quick PS. Do you see Testin as the number one target of Senate Democrats next year, or am I overlooking another?
You know, he won a Democratic seat. If you look at the map, it's tough. See, when Republicans drew these maps, you know, 8 years ago, they got a situation where their most vulnerable seats are up in midterm elections, which are usually better for them. You look at the map right now, like at one point there was a real reason to go after like Dan Fine's seat, the Oshkosh Fond du Lac area. That was a seat that was a few hundred votes in 2008, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't so close in 2016.
It was not, right.
Testin's seat flipped from Republican to Democrat. From Democrats to Republicans, with his election knocked off Julie Lassa back in 16. Look at that area. Rural, white, blue collar. That's like Trump. That's where you'll see Trump next fall. So the map isn't great for Dems.
You
next
still
year.
Expect the Senate to take up the four assembly passed abortion bills in June.
That's what they're saying.
Okay. You and I, as I said, we went to the Republican convention. Let's hear from Senator Ron Johnson and Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner, the dean of our U.S. House delegation, and Brian Hagedorn, Supreme Court Justice-elect. Let's hear, please.
What I'm trying to convince our Assembly and state Senate candidates is support those candidates at those local levels, because they're the folks knocking on doors, getting their friends and relatives to vote for them, and they'll vote for Assembly. Then they'll vote for state Senate. Then they'll vote for Republican House members. And finally, President Trump. Trickle-up elections, it'll be amazingly effective. But we need to identify, recruit, and inspire candidates to run.
But what we are facing now from the Democrats in the House and in the Senate is absolutely disgusting. These people hate Donald J. Trump. And hatred of your political opposition is not good for democracy. We were elected to legislate. We were not elected to investigate. You Democrats are not legislating. All you're doing is investigating. And frankly, you're making fools of yourselves because the American people are sick and tired of it.
Thank you. I am truly humbled and honored for the privilege of serving you all as your justice for the next 10 years. When I got punched, you were the ones who punched back. When I got knocked down, you grabbed the baton and you kept running with it. You did this, and I don't want you to let anybody else tell you anything else. You did this. You saved the Supreme Court.
Senator Ron Johnson, do you think J.R. officially took over as a leader of the state Republican Party as the highest elected official?
Well, he kind of started stepping in that role right after the November election because in his work, you know, my last man standing, right? Last Republican statewide.
Right.
So he's been taking over that role a little bit since then. Interesting, put out this vision of the state GOP going forward where the state party is like the corporate headquarters, which sets standards, handles communications, things like that. And then the county parties are like franchises that...
That's what he called them in my interview. Yeah. Local parties would be franchises. So the local parties, the local franchisees would ask the state party, how can you help us? And we heard Ron Johnson say that you should really actively support these lower candidates to groom them for the moving up, things like that.
And that there would be an expectation of holding those local franchises accountable
yes.
for what they were doing.
Right.
The issue is, you know, like I've never been in a political party before, but county party chairs... Not necessarily don't like being told what to do, depending on what kind of personality you have in that office. So you got to figure out how to work with those folks that make them feel like they're
right.
part of the process.
And no surprise in Congressman Sensenbrenner saying Democrats are, quote, braying at the moon and calling them 25 dwarfs. That's just Mr. Sensenbrenner being Mr. Sensenbrenner.
It's the environment we're in right now.
I was surprised. Have you ever heard a Supreme Justice-elect talk to a political, speak to a political convention and thank them? Thanked activist Republicans for saving the court?
No, in 2017, both Rebecca Dallet and Tim Burns, who were running for court in 2018, addressed Democratic convention as candidates.
Right.
Brian Hagedorn, I asked him, because there was criticism about him appearing there, if it was appropriate for somebody who's a justice-elect to be addressing a political, a partisan function. And he said he's there as an extension of his candidate, his campaign, to say thank you, that in his mind he was there as a candidate, not as a sitting judge, because he is still a sitting appeals court judge, by the way, until August when he comes to Supreme Court justice, and that he didn't envision going before a partisan group again like that unless asked to campaign for somebody or up for re-election himself.
But he's a very, very close friend of state party chairman.
Andrew Hitt.
Andrew Hitt. Okay, let's go to your stock picks. Rising.
Prison guards. So look, the Joint Finance Committee approved pay raises for all state employees. 2% January 1st of 2020, 2% more January 1st, 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Prison guards are in line to get another boost on top of that. The Evers plan would have got them to 1850-something. The Republican plan actually gets them 1903 as a starting salary. And now, this is the
reason... Because now it's 1635?
This is the reason why it's important. We have an issue where we have all kinds of vacancies, right? We have all kinds of overtime because of those vacancies. We need more prison guards. Will this help find people to come fill those jobs to help manage that overtime problem? Because... You have guards being forced to work basically double shifts, things like that that are stressful and lead to burnout.
Right.
The Republicans also added some bonuses for hitting, you know, 10 years, 15 years, 25 years, those kinds of things.
$500 cash, $750 cash. Right.
Yep, up to $1,000, I think, for year 25 and each 5 years after that.
Yep.
So there are incentives being put in place to try and do something. The issue has been for a long time. When unemployment is low, and you can find a job that pays you almost as much or as much mm-hmm. that you're not in a prison, which job are you going to take? Well, we're in a safer environment. So is this enough to try and pull more people in to address the problem that we've been having?
Okay, that's right. Mixed.
So Lena Taylor, she is talking about running for mayor of Milwaukee. We've heard Tom Chavis off and on over the years. The question is, you know, can she win? Mayor Barrett, I don't think, has formally announced he's going to run, but we all know he's going to. The race is in the spring of 2020. Lena Taylor, she's a polarizing figure in the Capitol.
She ran for county executive. She was on Joint Finance. She's no longer on Joint Finance. Excuse me.
She very passionate. She also had a incident with a bank teller a year or two ago that, you know, got her some grief and a sort of conduct citation or something like that.
Right.
But you look at her primary when she was challenged by Mandela Barnes in 2016. She won 60%. People thought that race was going to be close, and it wasn't because she can passionately inspire her supporters.
Yep.
But can she raise the money? Can she make her call a reason for why Barrett should be reelected? Don't forget now, we've got three people talking about running in the primary. Two of them are African-American. How that impact the black vote in Milwaukee in that primary? Barrett, he's got his own baggage, right? You know, when the first thing, when you mention Tom Barrett, what's the first thing people say? He's a nice guy.
Yeah, right.
Right? Is that what you want out of your mayor? But he also has landed the 2020 Democratic Convention. He's got Fiserv Arena downtown. He's got a building boom going on downtown
Deer
Milwaukee.
District, yes.
So is there a reason to replace him? You know, it's something to watch. But she's also had two of her colleagues from legislature who are Democrats escape the minorities to become mayors in the last couple of years. So
that's true.
There's a path
there.
Eric
Enrich and Corey Mason. Okay, sorry, but you got 40 seconds to do your falling. Go.
Okay, so look, Republicans have pulled out two of the main planks of Evers' budget already, right? The education and Medicaid. He'd have a tough time getting something back in no matter what because they don't like those things. But the stuff that flared up last weekend about his communications chief saying that it was basically GOP leaders won't talk to Maggie Gow, she's that because she's a woman.
His chief of staff.
Raising a sexism allegation is not going to help things. And here's what I get at. Like, there may be some truth or some real truth to the Evers people about what's going on, that they won't talk to her for some reason. But when you throw this out in the public realm, you're exacerbating what is basically a non-existent relationship. And if you're Evers, if you want to get stuff back into your budget, you have to have some kind of working relationship with these guys to get something back in. He's talking about going to the public and having to pressure lawmakers. That's not working so far. So what's he do to get things back in the budget? And then it becomes, what is the Evers hammer? What is his end game on this budget to force them to kind of come to his side of the table and see things his way? Is it that full veto? Is it the partial veto? If he does that, then what happens? And we don't know what happens and who comes out on top if there's a full veto of a budget, because we've never seen it happen before.
Yeah, I want to pursue that, but we're out of time. Next week, Joint Finance comes back, as you said. The UW, DNR, they're going to do district attorneys, they're going to do public defender, they're going to do circuit courts. Anything else to look for next week?
Maybe some peace and quiet at some point. We have a Democratic convention next
weekend. I doubt it. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a week. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind from May 24.